Hi everyone, Hassan here from the Ref6 podcast. I am joined by John.
Yep, hi, I'm John, still a level 4 from Sussex.
Brilliant. Rob?
Yeah, hi, I'm a level 5 ref from Shropshire, hopefully going to get my level 4 promotion this year, and I'm up at Liverpool at uni, which if you can still call it uni.
Brilliant. And we're joined by Dan as well.
Yep, hi, level 4 from Sussex as well.
Brilliant. So as we always do, we're going to start with a bit of news from the footballing world. So John, do you want to kick us off?
Yeah, so something came out the other day from the Times newspaper saying that the Premier League referees will back moves to revert to the old handball law, with sort of the match officials being unhappy the way, obviously we've spoken about handball before and it's coming back again. And apparently the Premier League referees, according to sort of like different sources, are unhappy with the way it's being applied in the Premier League and generally sort of fans. So the Premier League will going backwards, basically.
Yeah, I mean, I think the head of UEFA has also sent a letter into FIFA about the handball law as well and seeing if there's an opportunity to change it. So, look, I think the way they've implemented it has been correct all season based on law. However, it seems like the law has made or is becoming pretty unpopular with fans, everyone, players and referees. Yeah. I just want to touch on this with you guys all on the call. How has what you've seen in terms of handball and the elite level impacted your games? Like, have you had a lot more calls for handball? Do you think you've given handballs this year that you wouldn't have last year? Do you want to, who wants to go ahead with that?
I think for me, it's been a case of amateur players getting a lot more confused about what handball's going to be given for. So it's definitely just an appeal for everything, especially, yeah, especially anywhere inside the attacking half. It's just straight away bang, and they've seen on the TV, let's have handball. So I think it can be difficult sometimes to explain, yeah, that's not handball, because it's just it's his hand in front of his body rather than hand out to the side. So
yeah. And Dan, similar?
Yeah, I'd agree. I think it's just kind of turned into a bit of a shout for handball for anything, really, just because I don't think any of the players really understand it, it seems, because of that confusion of understanding it. So they just scream and shout and hope.
Yeah, that's fair. And John, anything similar?
Yeah, it's very similar, really. With lower league football, you find they appeal for everything, because, do you know what I mean, like, as bad as it sounds, like sometimes shouting for something, you think, oh, right, yeah, okay, there must be something there. So you're going to get a shout for everything, especially at handball anyway. Like, we get loads of shouts anyway as soon as it touches their hand. But at our level, it's easier to explain, no. Yeah, he was running, he was in a running motion, and they sort of accept that. Obviously, we don't have VAR, so we can't bring it back and look at it. We just say, he was in a running motion, he brought his hands in, and they genuinely accept it if you explain it like that. But if you just scream, no, it's not a handball, you've got to sort of tell them why, in my from what I've learned.
Brilliant. In other news, the Ukrainian female FIFA referee who officiates in the top flight in Ukraine, Katerina Monzol, is to take charge of a Nations League game between San Marino and Gibraltar. So again, we've been trying to highlight as much news as we can on the female side of refereeing. We had Stephanie Frappard do a men's UEFA game, and now to see another female take charge of a men's UEFA game is great too. So that's another piece of news. Everyone probably would have seen yesterday, there was some interesting conversations that happened between the FA chairman, Greg Clark, and the Department of Culture and Sport, I think, DCMS, talking about certain issues within the footballing world. And unfortunately, depending on your viewpoint, he made some very, a string of remarks that a lot of people found offensive, a variety of different things, and ended up resigning at the end of the day. So kind of from my perspective, a great kind of justice being prevailed, where, you know, someone said something very inappropriate and actually been made to kind of pay for that and has resigned. So hopefully the next chairman will be chairwoman, maybe someone who can move the those types of thought processes in the FA a little bit forward. And I'm not saying it's rampant within the FA, but at least just from that one conversation, it wasn't the didn't put the FA in the best light. It didn't represent all the people that we know who work in the FA that are definitely a lot more diverse and inclusive of different people's backgrounds, etc. So a big news there that hit kind of Twitter and then went everywhere in terms of the BBC and Sky, etc. So and then next, John.
Yeah, the final point of the news is that the Premier League again, the Premier League seems to have a busy week this week. They're going to resit the campaign led by the teams about allowing 5 substitutions to happen in the Premier League. So obviously the rule for that is they're allowed to make 5 subs, but in 3 instances.
Yeah.
So 3 stoppages in play, so you can make 5 subs. So it's still like 3 subs, but you can make more than 1 in there. After, I think it's Pep Guardiola and Klopp especially have been hampered with injuries, and they're saying that it's not... Obviously, they play Sunday, Wednesday, Saturday, and apparently it's just getting a little bit too much for them. So they want sort of more subs.
I think it's fascinating how this has been able to be brought back to a vote again, if it does. I'm pretty convinced that it's going to go the same way as the previous 2 votes, and the lower league clubs are going to vote them down again. But you know, it's an interesting one, and I think to change it halfway through a season doesn't make sense. Look, they did change it halfway through a season last year, but that was, you know, really different circumstances. Whereas now, I think they've got to get used to rotating players and that. But again, on this one, I want to ask you guys, what do you think about kind of the National League system adopting something like this? Because we don't, you know, it is very much three subs from 5 players on the bench. But at grassroots, you know, they have a lot less resource, right? So is it something that, you know, you think clubs would want to be able to do, or do you think it adds even more complexity to an already strained season?
I think the first thing to say on that would be the top level with Guardiola and Klopp. They seem to, the reason it will get probably voted down is they just want to bring on loads of attacking players at the end of the game to maybe break some teams down. And I saw it's fast. I've just checked it now because I wasn't sure, but they only made 2 and 1 subs in the City-Liverpool game on Sunday, which was a bit of a strange time to go and attack it in the media, wasn't it? But I think as you go down lower leagues, I think football's been 3 substitutions in most competitions for a while. So I think unless the schedule gets really hectic with teams playing Saturday, Tuesday after this lockdown, I don't see any reason why they'd need more substitutions, to be honest.
No, fair enough. Yeah. Similar thoughts from you guys?
Yeah, I'd agree with Rob. Like, unless they're kind of doing Saturday, Tuesday, and then potentially Thursday and 3 games in a week, then I think, yeah, fair play. You can look at having potentially more subs. But if you're kind of just doing Saturday, Tuesday, realistically, everyone should be fit enough for that. Especially kind of our point of view as referees as well. We've got to do it, so why can't a player do it?
That's very true. And John, you mentioned around... actually, they're in a bit of a privileged position around the transfer window.
Yeah, so it's different at the top level with obviously they're set with a transfer window. They can only sign players from in January, and they can only sign players between June and August, or whenever they change it every year. Whereas at the lower league levels, I find that they can sign players on a free almost whenever, as long as there's a deadline by the end of the week. So squads can change a lot. So I think at National League, they have to have a main squad. A squad of 25, I think it is. But at Isthmian League, players can come out of their contracts and join another club without too much of an issue throughout the season. Similar sort of county league football, players leave their contracts if they are contracted to them and move clubs willy-nilly. So like squad depth isn't so much of an issue because they know there's a vast range of players that they can just pick up on a free. So do they need the 5 subs in that game, because they probably have realistically 30, 32 players that are on their books ready and raring to go. So they have that ability to rotate at the lower level. So I feel like 5 subs at a lower level, especially it's senior football, is very redundant.
Yeah, perfect. Cool. All right, well, that's the news. A few weeks ago, we were chatting on our podcast about what we do when we talk to club assistants, the pre-match, the instructions we give. So today we wanted to move on and focus on the pre-match conversation that we have as referees with our assistant referees, and also from our point of view as assistant referees, what we like to hear from the referees. So I guess for those who are new to refereeing, maybe refereeing on their own on the park, when you get up to the point where you're refereeing with two other officials who are qualified referees, before the game, there's some kind of ceremony that happens whereby, you know, you get to the ground on time, you chat to each other, and you have a discussion about what you expect from each official in the game. And that's effectively what we're calling a pre-match conversation, right? So, John, did you want to just set out what kind of you like to do in your pre-match? I think what we want to talk about here is, do you memorize it? Do you have notes? This is for everyone. Do you memorize it? Do you ever have notes? Do you ever change it? You know, what happens when you know the officials or not? So let's talk about all of these things. So, John, do you want to go first?
Yeah, so when I first started with having senior officials, so neutral assistants, I used to, because obviously we have to wear suits, I used to have a suit for refereeing, and in that suit, in my little pocket, I had notes about how I'd break down the team talk, because obviously I was new to it and needed to make sure I covered everything, being a team bean at, I think I was 18. So that was obviously really important for me. And then obviously 5 years later, I've picked it up and I've learned it off by heart. But what I tend to do for me is I start at the goal line. So tell them what they're to the goal line and then work my way back up the pitch until we get to the halfway line. And then I start talking about the managers. And the thing I leave with, like end the conversation with, is mass confrontation, because it's one of the things that's the biggest. And I deal with it slightly differently to probably how Dan does and how Rob does, and probably how you do. So obviously that's the big key point for me. I change it up. So that's the last thing they remember on a mascot. It's the last thing we go in for. It's probably the biggest thing to remember. But if I'm with people that I know and trust, I won't keep it as big. I'll be like, I'll go over the key points, you know the drill, plenty of eye contact, like goal kicks, throw-ins, offsides are all going to be yours. We lead in the middle. And then I'll go over mass confrontation again, and sort of what I expect from them still, rather than just sort of like, yeah, you've worked with me before, you know what you're doing, get on with it. Like, at least we still go through the process.
Perfect. That's one of my pet peeves when I turn up as an assistant referee and a referee just says, you know what you're doing, let's go out and have a great time, which is nice, but actually, like, actually there are certain things that different referees, like you say, want differently. And I think those are so important to be covered. Rob, talk us through what you look for and what you do.
So the start of my pre-match will always focus around welcoming people to the team and getting eye contact, getting those soft signals, just to help each other, really, because I think highlighted it for me in January when I went to the Iber Cup in Brazil, and I found myself officiating with people that couldn't speak English, which was quite a challenge. So I thought, well, a normal pre-match of going from goal line forwards isn't really going to work here. So I think by making sure that we all knew each other, comfortable with each other before the game started, sort of that team spirit, that helped to get decisions right in the game. And it just made eye contact really important. So, that'll always be the first point that I make, even when I'm working with people that speak in English, because, just helping you get decisions correct. And then I think I'll move forward, as John was saying, really, I'll make sure I've established a senior assistant. They'll be right in at all times when I am. And then the junior assistant will be eyes on the play in case something's happening when we've got our eyes down in the book. And then third point I'd move on to would be assistant's main responsibility. So it's highlighting offsides, in and out of play, as their main area. But I think it's also, I always make the point of have a look where I am on the pitch before you do anything, because I want to make sure that we're given it as the most credible person. And then offsides, it's just sort of delaying that flag until we're absolutely sure that they're offsides, that we don't look like Muppets. That's always the line that I leave it with. And then I'll sort of work through smaller decisions in the game, goal kicks, corner kicks, moving forward. Of it's probably quite generic of what people do, but I think it's important to all be on the same page. And then, again, similarly to John, I'll always leave it with the two big things in a game of football, I think, which are the key match decisions, saying that, again, it's have a look where I am on the pitch before you get involved in penalties, that sort of thing. And then mass confrontation, just in case there's differences in how other referees do it.
Brilliant. We're gonna touch on some of the specific points around penalties and mass confrontation, exactly what you say, because I'm sure they're going to be different. So, Dan, is that a similar kind of flow, how you go about it, or do you do anything different?
Yeah, no, it's pretty much a similar flow from how I go about it, kind of the start of the goal line, like John does, and then just work up the field of play and the pitch to cover all the areas. And then as long as you kind of start on that goal line, then you work your way up. And in theory, you shouldn't miss anything because you're doing that step ladder. But obviously, sometimes you do, especially if you haven't got that little note card that, like John was saying about. But, but yeah, that's generally how I kind of tend to cover mine. I don't try and waffle it all out and go as long as possible. Just try and keep it short and sweet, really, but make sure you cover those points that you need to.
Perfect. So, like, time-wise, what would you say is like is it 5 minutes? Is it 10 minutes? When does it get too long? What are your suggestions?
I think if you're going over 5 minutes,
it's way too long.
Everyone
switch off.
Yeah, my attention span's not the greatest, as I'm sure everyone on this podcast already knows. But like, if it's going on for, like, I've been in team talks where we've got to the ground like an hour and 45 minutes early, and for half an hour I'm speaking about the game and what the referee wants out of me, and it's like, oh my god, like after about 10 minutes you're thinking, geez, this guy's still talking.
Yeah.
And, like, you know, you're not actually thinking about it anymore, and he's lost, and we gotta keep it within five, I think.
See, this is the thing that you've just got across is, you know, you want to engage and you want to let your assistants know exactly what you want from them, but you then don't want to get bored and you don't want them to think about you in a negative way because you're about to go into a game together. So, Rob, is that 5 minutes is about right for you too?
Yeah, I think so. And I've got a bit of a funny story about, well, what John's just said, actually. So I know you had Lee Probert on the podcast.
Yeah,
a few months ago, didn't you? He did a thing at St. George's so it was like a series of classroom sessions and outdoor. And one of them was on pre-match instruction. So he got Andy Garrett and Richard Menlin, who's the other guy who runs Par 4 Sports. And they were sort of playing the role of uninterested assistants. So they'd be looking at the ground, they'd be on their phone, they'd be doing stuff. And it was sort of a bit of role play to get used to dealing with those sorts of people, which is quite prominent in grassroots football, I find. Hopefully, the further I progress, then avoid those sorts of people. But that was quite good to perform it in front of a group. So that's quite a good activity for people that are listening to practice if you need to.
Mm-hmm. So an RA meeting or something like that, that's a good little topic for someone to take up. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. I think so.
Brilliant. Okay, so 5 minutes, structure. Do you have notes, both of you, Dan and Rob? Or have you kind of memorised it now?
No, I kind of just go from that step ladder from starting with the goal line and work my way up.
Yeah. So I assume you're all doing it on the pitch as well, so everyone's got like a visual cue of what's going on?
Depends how cold it is outside, really.
If it's raining.
If it's raining, it's inside. However, I do have a thing. Apparently, there is a guy, there's a couple of guys that bring whiteboards. And then they work on the whiteboard. So can you imagine turning up to a game with a whiteboard and going through it and being like, right, this is that is preparation at its finest.
I mean, look, the managers do it, so why aren't the referees? No, interesting. Yeah. It's a good backup if it is raining and hailing it down crazy. Okay, so there's a couple of things that you mentioned. So first is that I think is really important. It's just welcoming people to the team. Say, nice to meet you, learn a bit about them, you know, basically set you up for being a team, right? That's great. Picking your assistants in terms of who's senior and junior, giving them their roles specifically around that. Offside. So you mentioned offsides are obviously the assistant's main role, right? What are you saying around offsides? Are you literally just saying offsides are yours at all times? And literally the only thing I'm getting involved in is if you're wrong in law. That's like a very kind of parroted thing that I hear most referees say. Is there anything different to that? You're all nodding like, yeah.
I say the only time I'll take it off them is from a penalty. They're on the goal line, being my goal judge, and I tend to be in and around where the line is anyway. Mm-hmm. So that was the only time I'll take it off them, because obviously they're going to be scrambling to get back if the guy's missed it or it's been saved. Luckily, that offside challenge may not happen that much, but that's the only time I'll take an offside off him or her. It would be from a penalty kick.
That's very interesting, because that is definitely a correct procedure, but I don't think I may have heard one referee say that in my career. It's not very often that you hear that attention to detail. Anything else on offsides, Dan, Rob?
No, I think that's pretty much how I'll cover mine as well.
Do you boys work with buzzer flag, Clee?
Yeah.
You do, Dan. Rob?
Yeah.
I've worked with buzzer flags with at step 5 and 6 when I've been on the line, but I don't own any for when I'm in the middle, so.
Dan and Rob, does your pre-match differ because you have buzzer flags? Because I don't have buzzer flags, so I tell my assistants, like, keep the flag up for offside, because the chances are I can miss you. Like, I have that ability to miss you because I don't have a buzz. So do you still say that, Dan, in yours?
Like, I'm sure Rob, yeah, I still cover it, that they keep it up even if I do miss it or the buzzer doesn't work. Because at the end of the day, someone will shout. And then even if we can play on the advantage from the offside and it's broken away and we can carry on, then happy days. If we can't, then got to hold my hands up and take it back.
Perfect. Cool. And then the other pieces that you mentioned were around, so the two major ones I think we can all agree on are penalties or decisions around the penalty area and mass confrontation. So let's go to penalties. Dan, I'm going to start with you. I'm your assistant referee. What do you want me to do around penalties?
So I usually start with either I'm 100% certain and I'm giving it, and then even if the assistant thinks I'm wrong, just don't get involved because I'm 100% sure, and then we talk about it inside. Mm-hmm. Or I'm either 100% certain it's not and telling the player to get up, likewise not for them to get involved, otherwise it just looks messy. Or the third option is I'm staring at them for some help, so please do help me. And then I kind of, within that penalty bit, I also cover the free kicks on the edge of the box. Mm-hmm. Just for, if I'm giving one and it's on the edge, just for that 100% clarification, I either ask them to take the 2 steps to the left or the right, whether it's in or out, mm-hmm. just to cover myself and make me 100% confident and like confirm my decision that it's either in or out. Not to put the flag up either, just move that sideways, because I'm the only one that's then going to pick that up, unless there's another referee around in the ground. But the majority of the time, the players don't pick that up or anyone watching.
Yeah. I've heard a variant of that exact piece. So using your assistant to give you an indication whether the ball's inside or outside the box on a really close free kick. Some people have said exactly what you've said, and some people have said if it's inside the box, run down to the corner flag. If it's outside the box, basically stay where you are. And that's slightly more exaggerated. Mm-hmm. And it might get a little bit more attention, but at least then you haven't got like, how far have they gone in or out?
I feel like that eases your like control of the situation as well. I say almost the same as Dan, but say what you say, like if it's a penalty, run down to the corner flag, because then I know like it's inside the box and I can run straight to the spot then. And people will know straight away, like, I've clocked him, so I know it's inside. I can close straight to the penalty spot. And it's sort of, everybody knows that I'm in control. Like, if I wander around and sort of, was it inside, was it outside, to the assistant, and nobody really knows, then it sort of can inflame the situation. Whereas if I run straight to the spot, then they know it's a penalty. If I stand on the edge of the corner, on the corner of the box and say, it's here, they know it's a free kick. Like, it's diffused that situation straight away.
Cool. Rob, anything different from yourself?
No, that sounds very similar to what we mentioned. I think maybe highlighting, just delaying that flag whilst you wait for the, I'm 100% sure either way. just to make sure that you're not both 100% sure, but the opposite way around. But yeah, no, I don't have too much to add to that.
Brilliant. I think the only thing that I think is important, and we haven't really touched on it, we've just touched on giving penalties. So maybe during the penalty ceremony, what do you talk about? Do you ask them, what are you asking the assistant to do in the, once you've given a penalty, what are you asking them to do? Rob, do you want to go first?
Yeah, so predominantly watching whether the ball has gone over the line, so standing on the edge of the penalty area. But also watching for the goalkeeper going off the line. I think this is always make the point of make sure that it's blatantly obvious to the extent that all of the players are appealing for it as well, because I think as soon as you go looking for a decision where it's a couple of inches over the goal line, you're just probably making more trouble for yourself, when especially when the game's not televised. So I'd say watch the ball over the line, and if we're 100% sure that he's gone, maybe if he's on the edge of the 6-yard box or getting towards it when he saves it, then we'll go, okay, well, might need to retake this, but until that point, just stay out of it.
Yeah, good. Any other differences?
I mean, just from the flip side of that, obviously, as I've got buzzers, if they're unhappy with that, rather than sticking the flag up and kind of bringing the attention to themselves as well, just stand there and buzz, and then we have that conversation afterwards, but just not bring themselves to the attention. And
yeah, very good point. And if they are, or if you are going to retake it, maybe get over to them as quick as possible, because you know the players are going to go and follow them, right? So something like that. So the one thing I've noticed that I add in on here, and it's just because it's happened to me a few times, and I find your pre-match evolves once things happen to you, because you're like, oh, I hope that doesn't happen again, or I want to make sure that that kind of doesn't happen again, is from penalties, is remembering that obviously if the ball comes off the post and come back to the player and he scores a goal, that it's an indirect free kick because he's effectively touched the ball twice. And sometimes in the heat of the moment, your mind can go, because it's so rare that it happens that you just think it's okay. So I've added that in, is to my assistants, please just be, you know, give me an indication should that happen. Luckily, it's happened in games where, you know, I've been refereeing, I've spotted it, but it's taken a couple of seconds longer than it probably should have. Or, you know, I've been an assistant in a game and I've had to kind of flag and then have the conversation with the referee, because it's so rare. Do you have any things in your pre-match that have evolved based on, you know, incidents that have happened in your games? Anything in particular?
I do. Tight calls on the line. So the ball's gone over the line from a corner. And I never, ever covered this until and it never happened to me for like a year and a half. And then it happened to me twice in two games where the ball's gone over the line and everyone's like, ref, that's gone in. I'm like, I haven't got a clue. And my lino's standing there like, yeah, nodding his head, like, it's gone in. I'm like, oh, God. So I've got to go over, see what's actually happened. Right, it's a goal. So now I've said, like, put the flag up, tell me the ball's actually gone out of play because it's gone over the line, and then run to the halfway line, like, exaggerate that movement, because then I know it's gone in.
Yeah.
That's what I've had to evolve my pretty much to say.
Very interesting. Any of you guys?
No, I don't think so.
No, and Rob's not sure.
I think mine's just probably more involved in like the depth that I cover certain things, and not necessarily picking up and adding new bits in, just the depth of how I cover certain things, and then maybe not as much depth as other things.
Yeah, no, that's fair. I think we all focus when we start early on with like really focusing on goal kicks and talking about goal kicks for a while, you know, hey, you know, watch them at the 6-yard box, then go to the 18, or go, you know, or get on the offside line, which has slightly changed since the new goal kick law, right? Previously, we'd tell people, you know, monitor this, you know, if the goalkeeper's put it down in the 6-yard box from the 18-yard box, but now you're probably back there anyway if they're playing it short. And we're focused on these things that are, you know, goal kicks, throw-ins, and corner. We focus on, you know, the bits that aren't as important. And then we kind of almost rush through the big important pieces, which are the fouls, misconduct, penalties, and that's gone. But yes, it's super interesting that over time, I think you learn you know, quick ways to just get your point across on the things that are kind of a little bit more smaller, and then you focus a lot longer on the bigger, more important topics. So Rob, do you want to talk us through mass confrontation and what you talk about there?
Yeah, so I'll start off saying to the senior assistant, I think this maybe is where it might differ referee to referee. I'll say in terms of the benches, if they're going to run on the pitch, then they're probably going to run on the pitch anyway. So let's just try and notice who started it with numbers, if it's substitutes, or obviously if it's managers, we'll deal with it afterwards. But let them go on. Don't try and stop them. And then let's just try and form our big triangle so that we've all got different viewing points, making sure we're all keeping our eye on the play at all times. And then we're looking to try and, between us, trying to remember who's the initial foul been committed by, who has then reacted to that, and then who's run from 50 yards across the pitch to get involved, because they're the obvious ones we can get the numbers of, whether it's the goalkeeper or a centre-back or something like that. And then, yeah, I'd normally just say I'll give it a few blasts on the whistle, but I'm not going to keep blowing it. We'll just try and let it calm down itself. And then we'll have a chat, all three of us, and get it in order of red, yellow, ticking off if that's it, but that's probably unlikely. And then I'd probably add in, if I can get a quick red card in to defuse the situation, then I'll go for that first. But if not, then we'll have the chat and do it in order of severity.
We talked about quick cards on another podcast, and I think if a quick red or quick yellow can help diffuse a mass confrontation, that is probably the best points in time to give the quick flash card, as people call it. Do you ever talk about the numbers of players, right? So how do you define a mass confrontation? So some referees will say, you know, up to three of each team or up to six people. John, do you do anything like that?
Yeah, I say if it's six or less, I can probably deal with it. I can stand there, blow my whistle, make myself look big, stick my chest out and deal with that anymore. And I'm going to start asking you to creep in. And if they all suddenly dart in. So basically, I ask my assistants to monitor the speed of the players. If the players are sort of jogging in to pull each other away, then they can jog in. But if everyone's pinging in to this big circle, then I expect my assistants to react in the same way.
Interesting. I've not heard that before. That's a really, really cool idea. Measure that. You've got to mirror and mimic the speed of the players that are coming into that. Yeah,
because there's no point if there are a few guys that's sort of like half running in to pull people away, and I've got two assistants speeding in, it could heighten it because it seems to be like, oh my God, they think something's worse than it is, because they're like sprinting in. Whereas if they're sort of like wandering in, jogging in, then they're matching the tempo. So everyone seems to think that we've understood what's going on.
Yeah, brilliant. And then Dan, when you talk to the officials, once it's all died down, is your process to talk to both of them at the same time, or do you go one after the other?
No, I tend to all come in together, because then the players don't know what's come from who. If we are then obviously sending someone off or something like that, they don't know who's seen what and who said what, really. So if they're then going to have a swipe at someone, they've got to try and have a swipe at all three of us.
Mm-hmm. And just make sure that you're in a position where you can see all of the players, right? So you want to be on the touchline, probably looking back over the players over to the benches, which is great. Very, very cool. And then is there, from a mass confrontation perspective, and this is probably a little bit outside of the pre-match conversation, but you mentioned the instigator, the retaliator, and the two people running to the mass con. Is it important, or do you find it important that you're looking to balance the number of cards you give per team on that type of situation? Or is that an unwritten kind of thing, or is that just not something you do?
You'd like to, in like the grand scheme of things, because if there's 22 players in there, it happened to me at a game, like I had an 8-9 man brawl and I sent three of one team off and zero of the other, because that's all I could see. So you'd like to, like, you go over and be like, has the away team got anything? And if they say no, then there's not a lot you can do. You'd like to level it up because they're all in there, and if one team,
they've all done something, right?
You know, and you know they've all done something, but if you've not got the proof or you've not seen it, So yeah, you'd like to, but if it doesn't happen, then you know what I mean, you just face it as it comes. Brilliant.
Anything from Rob and Dan on that?
No, I think it's just making sure you kind of got everyone that's created something that someone's seen out of the three of you.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, don't go making it up.
Don't go guessing.
No, yeah,
that's the worst.
If you're not 100% sure, or your system's not 100% sure, then you can't give it.
No, perfect.
I've had referees in the past say to me, one assistant take one team and one the other. That's, I don't know what your thoughts are. I don't say it personally, but it is an interesting idea to maybe make sure that you do get one of both.
That's how I do it. I ask one. So if the senior assistant is in front of the away team, I'll ask him to look at the home team, and then I'll ask the other one to look at the other one. Just because then I look at all of them, so I've got a general idea. They're very much focused on one team, so I can go, right, away team, who did what? And they can pick it out rather than, because what you tend to happen, I know everyone looks at the same thing and no one looks outside of those players. So I know that if I've got one person looking at one team, one person at another, they're generally going to pick up the people around as well that are causing me potentially more issues by winding players up or catching someone without me realising it.
Yeah.
I think that's a really good point as well, because your view, as soon as you say, hey, look at the home team, your view comes a little bit backwards away from the incident, and it you know, you're getting a little bit more of a perspective in, so you're more likely to see things that you wouldn't if you're all just looking at the same incident. So that's great. Brilliant. And then how do you leave it? Like, how do you finish your team talk? And that will be our finish to this podcast this week. But how do you kind of sum up the pre-match, and is there anything you say at the end?
Just go out and enjoy it, make sure everyone's looking at each other and good communication throughout the game, but mostly just enjoy it. We're all there to have a good time.
Yeah.
Similar with you guys, same thing?
I think maybe asking if they've got any questions is quite a good place to start, certainly. A lot of the time, assistants will go to me, oh, what about the sin bin? And I'll go, oh, I've forgotten that for the 10th week in a row. So it's always good for someone to interrupt you and just make sure that you covered everything that they wanted to cover as well.
Yeah, no, that's great.
Yeah, same sort of thing. They ask any questions. Usually it's about foul throws. So get like the nitty gritty stuff. And then I say, all right, plenty of eye contact, plenty of thumbs up, plenty of smiles, and we'll go out and smash it.
Yeah,
and that's brilliant. That's how I leave it.
So that's great. I think the main thing is, and this would be my feedback to everyone, is you're talking about the serious stuff about the game, and then just making sure and reminding everyone why the hell we're there. And the reason is to enjoy it, right? Like, that's the reason we go out and referee. So brilliant. Guys, really appreciate your time during this lockdown. Love to get you on in the future. I think everyone listening or watching, I hope you've taken some ideas around what a pre-match talk should kind of construct, you know, have part, how a pre-match talk should come together. The key thing here is, you know, all of us are kind of grassroots, amateur, semi-professional level football in terms of refereeing. We don't have VAR, we don't have fourth officials in most of our games. So a lot of those people listening, I hope that resonates with you in terms of what we talk about. If you have any questions, please feel free to, you know, tweet us about any particular thing. If you've got any ideas that you do that are different to what we've spoken about today, give us a shout and let us know, and we can talk about those in future podcasts. So Rob and Dan, thanks so much for joining us. Hope when the season does kick off, you know, you get back out and have a great season. And Rob, good luck on that promotion for this year. Fingers crossed for you.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining. Take care.
Cheers. Thank you.